Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hiller, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Steve McQuillan and CFO Stephen King of Avintrans, a specialist engineering company supplying niche products and services to the power, medical, nuclear, defence, transport and industrial sectors. So big welcome, gents.
Hi, Paul. Good to be again.
Yeah, well, great to have you back on the show, not least given today's positive and in-line first half results with adjusted EPS increasing 21% to 14.6p. But we've always got to run through the financials there, Steve. I don't suppose you could just quickly take us through what the current demand picture is like in that advanced engineering division.
Yeah, well, the picture there is tremendous for us, Paul. Again, all the tailwinds have aligned to shove us forward, which is great. And in particular, new nuclear, which I'll come back to. But, you know, even all the other areas, you know, in a lesser way, defence obviously is good news for Hayward Tyler and Booth, given what's happening in the world. Data centres, AI is good news for Booth and Ormondy in terms of securing these kind of facilities and also water cooling of these facilities. Those sort of infrastructure is great for Booth because of all what's happening, not only with HS2, but other rail tunnel projects around the world and all the defence stuff that's going on. So for critical national infrastructure, that's all good news for both. But the big news story, I think, for AES is definitely new nuclear. The renaissance of nuclear is incredible now. And of course, this goes, as you know, for the division right across the board. So we're well positioned now from new nuclear to conventional civil nuclear with, you know, people building big power stations as they did before. And also life extension of existing power stations and then down to decommissioning of nuclear waste, etc. So we're right across the board there in different businesses. But the big news story, I think, is around new nuclear because it's gone completely mad. You know, what we're seeing is it's being driven really by the big tech guys in America, particularly Meta, but also Google, Microsoft, etc., making big contract and big bets on new nuclear with the next generation small modular reactor players, in particular TerraPower, who we are well aligned with already. And they are just really starting to ramp up the timescales and the pressure on building new nuclear power stations in a next generation kind of way. And you may have seen the news, I think, that you know last month TerraPower came out and said they'd done a deal with Meta to build up to 8 of their new nuclear power stations. Meta also announced that they're going to do a deal with Oklo, which is another one of these new nuclear players, to provide 1.2 gigawatts of power using their SMR configuration. And Westinghouse came out and said they'd done an $80 billion deal with the US government to revitalize nuclear in the supply chain for nuclear in the US. So it's clear that aside from the big tech guys just placing their own bets, regardless of government money, the US government is also putting its money where its mouth is to come first in this next generation game and really driving that. And then the other key thing that's helping us there, potentially for businesses like us, not only us obviously, but anyone like us, is that if you're going to build small modular reactors, you're going to build them in factories at bigger volumes over time than we ever did. They were only ever built as one-offs in the fields and usually custom designed. But now everybody's trying to do a standardized design. So you just build them in factories, build all the modules, and then assembly and test on site, which obviously cuts the delivery time, cuts the cost tremendously. But for people like Eva Tyler, it's fantastic because it means that every year we'll be making pumps for the next nuclear power station, the next nuclear power station, from each vendor that we work with potentially, and then there'll be multiple vendors. I mean, we won't end up working with them all, but the really exciting thing is that there's several we are working with already, and we're bound to end up working with a number of them, which is brilliant for us. And the only kind of dilemma that, well, it gives us a dilemma about exits, as we'll come back to, I'm sure.
Yeah, just on that nuclear power. I mean, it's obviously fabulous that we've actually now got these new nuclear facilities, which are off the drawing board and have been industrialized and commercialized and roll out lock, stock, and barrel with the huge sort of budgets of the sort of like your big giant like things like Meta, etc. What sort of time scales do you think that will start feeding through? Because you obviously won, well, Hayward Tyler won that sort of $10 million contract, first of all, with TerraPower. What sort of timescales are you looking at for the other sort of drawdown of potentially winning other deals?
First of all, on TerraPower, they'll keep adding to that contract because that'll grow as they go forward and add prototypes, more pumps, more design stuff to it. So that'll keep growing. Westinghouse and GE are quite advanced now with their design stuff, and so we expect to start to see orders from them relatively soon. But having said that, this isn't going to make any difference to the order intake, the forecast this financial year, and obviously we're most of the way through it now anyway. And even next year, it will be a limited impact. It's kind of beyond that, it really starts to make an impact. So FY28 onwards, we should really start to see increase in order volumes, and that feeding through into bigger sales for HT in particular for new nuclear. And then TerraPower and Meta, for example, want to start getting these power stations on the bus bars by the early 2030s. So that's the timescale thereafter. And that's much faster than nuclear would normally be. But they're being helped by the American government saying, yep, we'll get all the regulatory stuff out of the way, which in itself obviously takes years normally, but they're going to push all that out of the way to make sure these things get built. So I'm sure there'll be some delays along the way that we can't forecast, but it's certainly going to be much faster than we're used to seeing with nuclear.
Yeah. And what about the sort of the Korea hydro and nuclear power? Because that was a $16 million contract, I believe. And it was in the States, wasn't it? It was actually.
America are building it because Vermont traditionally did the product for them. So America are building them in Vermont, and then that'll be shipped to South Korea for the power plants in South Korea. Small impact of that on this year, which we've already accounted for. Bigger impact on next year as we do a lot more of that work. But I think, Steve, that's going to, again, in itself, probably expand into FY28, isn't it?
Well, I would think so. I mean, the lead time on one of those projects was 80 weeks, 80. That's how long some of these things take to get. excuse me, get the specific metals, etc., etc., and then get it over there tested, etc. So, I mean, but in the world of old nuclear, not rather new nuclear, old nuclear, that was quite quick. In new nuclear, we're talking, 80 weeks, and they want to design and the pump in place and getting power. It is that mad. But no, that KHNP in particular order has a much bigger impact on FY27 in itself. It might just slightly slip over into 28, but mainly second half of 27, I think.
And then just turning to sort of like another big trend, sort of secular growth trend, which is the data centers. I mean, that they're obviously built in the States. They're building data centers the size of sort of twice Central Park. I mean, we're absolutely huge things, and that's drawing forward huge amounts of sort of industrial pump equipment, HVACs, and also power requirements. How are you seeing not only the new build of sort of data centers, but also the pull through of all the other services re required for it?
Yeah, so as you say, that's already starting to impact. I mean, we're less well represented in Booth and Ormandy in the States. Obviously, that hasn't been traditionally where we've been with those two businesses. Booth has just started to make headway in the US on the rail side. We just placed our first door in the New York Metro, which we've never done before. So that's really interesting. And there's a number of decent infrastructure projects around that in America. So we still penetrate kind of data centers in the US, but what we're certainly seeing is for both Ormandy and Booth in the UK and Europe, a lot of interest in what kind of security products in Booth's case can we do for data centers. And in Ormandy's case, more and more interest on water cooling of data centers, either as the primary cooling circuit or as a backup circuit if the primary air cooling circuit fails. So that's really interesting. We're seeing that just growing more and more. And as I say, that gives us a positive dilemma about these businesses in terms of, well, how big is that going to be and how long is it all going to take? And a high quality problem, as our chairman likes to call it, in terms of, there's lots of upside, but when do we call it? How do we call it? Is not easy, actually. But anyway, all good news. It's a good problem to have.
And what about sort of the defense side? I mean, obviously you do the blast proof doors, don't you, for the submarines, I think, as well as obviously doing for HS2. Is there anything else in there from the defense that is worth sort of like investors sort of like keeping their eye on?
Yes, because I mean, again, in this uncertain world, the UK government and other governments are worrying more about securing certain facilities in the UK and elsewhere, and therefore that requires much more secure doors. Because especially since, like data centres, actually, you might not have that many personnel in some of these facilities, so you need to make sure no idiots can get in. So that requires much stronger attack-proof doors, and of course, Booth's ideally placed for that. So again, we're starting to see inquiries coming in there, which are substantial. Again, it's probably 2028 plus, or certainly later in 2027 before we see any impact there. But certainly, seeing the inquiries come through now that are going to make a difference to Booth over the coming years. And as I said, Ormandy was already seeing it on data centres now. So different timescales for different people, depending on what's going on.
So essentially for this sort of nuclear, the new nuclear, and we've got obviously the data centers and potentially defense as well. Have you got enough capacity there, Steve, to do all of this extra demand?
Mostly, it's interesting. TerraPower came around the Luton facility recently and said, "Yep, this is ideal. We could build European stuff here. Can you replicate this in America, please?" Because our Vermont plant's quite a lot smaller than our Luton plant. So one thing we certainly got our eye on, and Steve might come back to this in terms of sort of year-end positioning on debt and all the rest of it, we've got our eye on the fact we probably need to have a bigger facility in the US than we've currently got, and we're debating where that is, how big it needs to be, etc. at the moment. Again, a high quality problem because, if we've got a bigger facility and we can make these kind of pumps for TerraPower and others, then obviously we expect we'll get more business from it. So, and of course, the key thing, particularly, it's true in the UK too, but even more so in America, you need to have the nuclear stamp, the N stamp, and all the regulatory requirements. You just can't build nuclear stuff willy-nilly. And that's quite difficult to get. And of course, we've already got that N stamp at Hamer Tyler in Vermont and at Energy Steel in Michigan. So that puts us at a significant advantage. That we've already got all that accreditation and can just move forward from there. But we're certainly going to need a bigger boat as far as Michigan slash Energy Steel is concerned, and Vermont probably too.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's a great segue then into the financials there, Stephen. If you could take us through the sort of the key numbers. I did see margins increasing as well as obviously the EPS. But anyway, what are the sort of things that investors should keep their eye on?
Okay, so get back into a bit of sanity now then. Is that what we're trying to say? So I mean, no, look, it was a good first half, slightly different from the last first half last year. And I think when we had that last year, we said this was a particular unusual year because it was more of a 51-49 split actually, whereas this is more back to its more traditional 45-55 split. And you can see that reflected in the lower OE sort of content. But overall, great order book, sort of over 95% in AES, slightly different in medical for the year, and marginally over 60% for FY27, as we talked about some long-term contracts in there, in particular
That's re
KHNP.
just that's re revenue cover, is it, for the for this year and for next year?
For AES, medicals are slightly different because they've got shorter term product, etc. They'd be probably 60% covered for this year, and we'll come back to the reasons for that in a little while. But revenue pretty static there at around about 78, 79 million, which is good. Gross margin slightly ticked up to 31.7. Why did that tick up? Well, if you look at the relative size of the aftermarket to the OE, Aftermarket grew about 3 percentage points, so it does have an impact on the gross margin. But again, you look at the actual line, it's plus £1 million. So yeah, it's not too bad year on year. I just did EBITDA. Again, similar in the AES division, up at about 11 million, but lower losses, if you like, in medical. Now, some of that is because some of the commercial costs have rolled into probably more into the second half or the first half of FY27. But we're actually getting there. We're cutting down on some of these pre-commercialization costs, but there's still a way to go, as we know. Just did adjusted diluted EPS, as you say, up 20%. But percentages are just wild when you get to those sort of numbers. Dividend, we've increased slightly to 2 pence. As we say, it's progressive. And the key thing there is the debt was well kept under control. The debt was the same as it was at the 31st of May. So pretty strong cash generation in the underlying AES business. But offset there by investment into the medical sector in particular, there's about 4 million onto development costs there. But also in the AES division as well. We've got to start getting ready for this new nuclear. So there will be some investment coming in, possibly in the latter half of this year, start of next year. We've got to get the facilities ready for these. Hopefully get ready for these new nuclear pumps that are 30 plus meters, 30 feet long or whatever it is. It's crazy. And they've got to turn them upright. So you've got to have the facility and the room and space and room. And Vermont hasn't quite got that in spades. So we're going to probably have to set up a new facility with hopefully a bit of help from TerraPower up in Michigan.
And what sort of volume?
Overall, a great first half, second half. Hopefully we go from strength to strength. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did see the net debt was flat, etc. What's going forward then? What sort of like CapEx would you th what you're thinking of in terms of the new facilities for, basically new nuclear or whatever?
Well, it all depends on whether we lease or actually buy the facility, and we're just looking at that at the present moment in time. The issue is because you've got to turn the pumps upright, you've got to either a very deep pit or a very high ceiling. So again, we're looking for the right facility. We think we found one or two facilities that would suit, but we're going to have to put some down payments in and move some machines in there, etc. So you're probably talking more between 1 and 2 million this year, and probably a similar sort of amount and a bit more probably going into FY27 as we start things rolling.
Yeah, and there's no sort of impact on tariffs and stuff because obviously we've had the other thing, which has been nuts over the weekend, was Donald Trump pushing up UK tariffs from 10% to 15%.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we're obviously setting the facility up in Michigan and the US, and why we have the three geographical pillars. I can't really comment on where the tariffs are because 1 minute they're nothing, next minute they're 15, then they're back to 10. I think you've just got to get on with it, haven't you, Paul? And God knows if people are going to get the money back or not. I don't know. It's Trump, isn't it? So we shall, just put our best foot forward. Obviously, if there are tariffs, we'll have to get asked the customers to pay those tariffs, but everyone else in the world sounds like they're going to have the same tariff. So I think it's still a level playing field, just about. I'm not sure.
Okay, well let's move to the medical side because it's another exciting growth story. We've got the two sort of well, we've got more than two sort of like companies. We've got Adaptix and Magnetica, but Adaptix has obviously got the FDA approval
Yes.
for its X-ray, and Magnetica's going for it. Can you just take us through what the latest sort of like stages are or the latest position of that sort of division? Because you've just Yeah, I just did see actually you've recruited a rock star CEO for it, old Stuart Gall as well.
Definitely, he's definitely a rock star. We're really impressed by him so far, so we think we've made the right decision there. And of course, as you imply, Stuart's been right round the block here. He's had a lot of experience of IP and developing startups, and then launched Intelligent Ultrasound onto AIM himself as the CEO, grew that business, scaled it in America, and eventually exited it partly to GE and partly to a Swedish business. So he's been right round the cycle of everything we need to do, which is great. So he's hit the ground running. He gets that. He's already done a whistle stop round the world tour. He must have been knackered after it. In the US in different locations, then going to Australia, and then coming back home. So good on him. He's been right around the whole block actually to check everything out. And so far so good. He's really pleased with what he's seen. I mean, like the rest of us, he wishes we could go faster, but we are where we are. And actually, if investors take a look at the presentation we're releasing with the results today, you'll see some more thoughts from Stuart in there in his section about what are the next steps there, particularly for Adaptix. So for Adaptix, good news, the brakes are off now with the 510K award. We can get motoring now. We will soon have the CE award for the UK and Europe as well. We're hopeful that'll be in the next month or two. It might slip to June, but it's in that time frame. So we should have the CE awards shortly. So then we'll be completely brakes off on orthopedics. We're already obviously motoring on NDT, on non-destructive testing, and we're already motoring on vet. But certainly the big thing there is getting forward now with orthopedics. From having had that award in November, we've been able to start installing systems at key opinion leaders in the States, and already got a couple of those installed with more in the pipeline. Similarly, we've already got a couple of distributors on board now in the States with, again, more in the pipeline. And then it's just a question of getting them trained up, getting their pipelines developed, and then starting to get to sell the product. And Stuart's kind of reflected that in a Gantt chart we've put in the presentation to show how we expect that to build up roughly. I mean, again, it's difficult to be exact about it, but and I think by the time we get to September, Stuart will have a much better handle on how that those sales are going to build up. But we're certainly starting to get a handle on it now. And the key thing is getting the 510K, obviously. So we're really pleased about that.
When do you just on Adaptix, when do you think it's going to break even at all, Steve? Any idea? I mean, we're talking 2, 3 years or?
Oh no, it'd be faster than that. Steve, you might comment on that. It'd be next year, we think, isn't it? Next financial year at some point.
I think originally we expected it to be FY latter end as to FY 27, given, well, it depends what how the market goes, of course, and picks up. But I think probably that might have just slipped into early FY 28. But again, we're just at that stage where we're doing the budgets and the forecasts and doing from the bottom up with particular distributors. So we'll have a better idea in that September. But I would have thought it's probably latter end of 27, start of 28, sort of thing.
So that's May. We're only talking May 2027, aren't we? In actual dates wise. Yeah, okay, right. So it's only just over a year. Okay.
No, it's looking really positive. And I mean, we just won our first big order for the NDT product, and with more in the pipeline there potentially. So that's really helpful as well, because they sell it at least $300,000 up to kind of $500,000 or even more, actually, depending on what configuration the customer wants. Much more variable configuration than the orthopedic or veterinary product. So that's really encouraging too, actually. That looks like a runner. And then on the magnetic side, obviously still the frustration of the 510K. Again, what we're pleased with there is Stuart, having been to Australia, is happy with what the guys are doing. It's just a mountain they're climbing, but he's happy they're on the right track and that they're just going to take a few more months of effort to get there. And he can obviously start to help them now with that in the pre-commercialization phases, which he's already getting into. So that's encouraging. And then, as a complete aside now, what we're also now really excited about, related to AI again, is Scientific Magnetics is selling increasing numbers of magnet and cryogenic systems to various people who are making products for quantum computing. And of course, that's also now a huge hype area in terms of what you may be able to do, might be able to do with a quantum computer. So we're selling more and more systems to help people drive and build quantum computers. And we see a big future for that with SiMag. So that might in itself become a separate business unit that we spin out or that we build up. And that looks very exciting as well. Again, indirectly driven by the whole AI wave that's going on. So really exciting times. And just frustrated that we haven't got the 510K yet for Magnetica, but we'll get there.
And just on those last, the sort of the magnetic and the scientific magnet one, the quantum magnets. When do you think when do you think they'll get sort of like break even? Because obviously the Magnetica might be quicker because it'll use the blueprint of Adaptix in the States once it gets FDA
Yes.
approval, and presumably your quantum computing magnet business has been a, you know, is now really sort of it's probably got its cost base pretty much rationalized
Yeah,
at the moment.
that's already basically profitable, Scientific Magnetics, but it can only get better. So that's positive. But Steve, I think it'll be similar timing with our FY 28 probably for Magnetic, I think.
I would probably think it'll be 6 months after that, at least probably. So it's going to be, I would hope it'd be FY 28 because we've got these two base businesses in there anyway, Paul. SciMag is, as Steve said, is profitable and cash generating. We've got TechMag in the States, which is profitable, which supports Magnetica to obviously look like it's having less commercialization costs. But the big thing there is the magnet, excuse me, the MSK magnet. And of course, they're $1 million roughly each or whatever. So that's going to make a big difference, even if you get a couple of orders. But it's a 6 month build time, etc., etc. So the first thing, just let's concentrate on getting the 510K and then getting out on the start line at that races.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that's an excellent position. And just to ask about sort of like exits and potential monetization, because you've got sort of, I think you've got at least six big secular tailwinds. You've obviously got the nuclear, you've got basically the data centers, you've got transport and defense. But now you've got obviously the X-rays, you've got the MRI and the quantum dots. So there's only two of you and Stuart, obviously. So it's quite a lot
Well,
of.
and Austin. Let's not forget Austin's our
Okay,
CEO.
yeah, Austin as
Austin's our
well. Okay.
COO of the group. So we've reinforced the team in that sense. So yeah,
Yeah.
we nearly brought the two of them with us. Next time we'll give you four for two, Paul. How about
So just I mean, obviously you could do all that yourself, but that would be a bit of a stretch. What are sort of the views in terms of whether you continue, progressing all those opportunities or potentially exit and give, effectively sell it off to somebody else with a bigger bankroll?
Yes, clearly. And different strokes for different folks. So the two, as people have commented on before and you've noted before elsewhere, that are nearest to the exit door are Hayward Tyler, Normandy. In normal times, we would say, and given the markets are better now, we would say it's a more normal exit path for those two. The things that are just giving us pause for thought are what we've already touched on with Normandy. How big is this data center cooling opportunity? And should we wait for a minute? And with Hayward Tyler, how big and how fast is this new nuclear opportunity, and how long should we wait to sort of capture the value of that? So that's the dilemma, positive dilemma for the board on those two. But certainly absent those kind of very positive trends, the two of them would be on a fairly swift exit path now, I think. But they are just giving us pause for thought. So I think that's still a dilemma. We'll maybe that'll be clearer by September. Let's see. And then with medical, our view is still certainly that the most likely outcome for that, and one of the reasons we're bringing Stuart on board, is the most likely outcome is an IPO. I think, again, that's not going to be, well, certainly not going to be this financial year, obviously, probably not even next financial year, but then any time after that is feasible. So, Stuart's already doing the kind of groundwork for a potential IPO, because that all takes months to, a year or two to prepare the ground for. So as part of his role, obviously, he's already thinking about that and starting to, as I say, prepare the groundwork. Now, whether we go straight to IPO, and depending where we do the IPO, it's also an open question, then we might want to do a crossover round. We bring in another investor to help us with that. And that's an open consideration. And we have not only a couple of specifics in mind there in terms of who we might work with, but also more generically, Stuart and Willem, the Adaptix chairman, working on what the landscape is there and who might help us. So that's all in progress. Although, as I say, we don't expect any IPO result to happen probably before FY28. I think that's fair, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you've got to get the revenue. Well, my view would be we've got to get the revenue traction there, certainly in Adaptix. And people want to see that we've got a good product mix across all of the three formats. And you would think FY27 would give you that. It's certainly a decent base to go from. And then you've got 6 months to do an IPO probably after that. But that's the earliest time to go. Obviously, we as you said, we're not going to do it this year, and probably not into calendar year for the rest of the calendar year 26. Probably not in calendar year 27. Possibly, be the latter end of that, I would think. But hey, I mean, if we get ourselves ready, we can move if the markets are in the right place, and they seem to be warming up nicely as well. So hopefully, that would be perfect timing.
The other thing is the banks are supportive in terms of sort of lending us more money to do the development work that we need in these kind of various different areas, as you point out. So we're happy about that. We've obviously been supporting the requirements for medical through internal resources anyway, and we can continue to do that. But the banks can certainly help us with further funding for example, new nuclear. In the worst case, if we don't dispose of anything but still need to put further investment into new nuclear, then we might come back to the market and say, okay, we need more help investors, you know, give us some funding to help us do that. I don't think anybody's going to say get lost given the potential opportunity there. So, you know, I think there's ways and means of doing this. Even if we do decide for a bit longer, we've got to kind of spin all the plates ourselves. But equally likely, we'll probably sell something and then it won't be a problem anyway.
Yeah. I mean, certainly in terms of the valuation multiples in that engineering division, they are only increasing at the moment for data centers, for HVAC, and for new nuclear. I mean, I don't know what they are now in terms of EBITDA, but I'd be surprised if they're just for my personal, you know, sort of like estimate would be, I'd be surprised if they're less than 15 times EBITDA at the moment, given how
Ooh, that's a bit racy, Paul. Hang on a minute.
Sold to the man, Mr. Hill. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, by all means, yeah. If that's an offer, then we'll take you up on it, yeah.
But that's my estimate anyway. But anyway, what sort of time scales for that engineering would you sort of like, you know, you mentioned it might be relatively quick, and it is might, and it all depends on what the market's like and all this sort of stuff. Is it that we're talking 12 months, 18 months, that sort of stuff?
Yes, I mean, if we decide we're exiting either HT or Ormondy, then that's the sort of time scale you're talking about. If we decide we're keeping it for a while longer to realise more value for shareholders, then obviously it won't be. But yeah, certainly, you know, in a normal situation, normal circumstances, that sort of exit timing would be viable and foreseeable. But as I say, we have to wait and see what happens with some of these new opportunities and how we want to play it.
Okay, good. Okay, we're just moving then to the outlook then, Stephen. I know you've mentioned about you've got 95% revenue cover for this year, so that looks pretty much certain, dependent obviously on certain things, but more so next year, FY27. And you mentioned 60% revenue cover there. How do you see that one sort of like panning out?
Well, yeah, as we said, because of the very long-term contracts that, in particular, KHNP, we talked about that earlier. The strength of the order book for FY27 is around is over 60%, about 62%. You know, a few percentage higher, as you would expect, than the prior year. It's all about getting the orders out, though, as you mentioned. So certainly for this year, it's yes, you've got the orders, but you've got to get them out and getting the right milestones, etc. But you know, the order book seems to be growing. Certainly on the AES side, we can see some very strong order prospects, but they are only prospects, and hopefully we'll get them prospects in the bag in the near future, especially if we can get some of these new nuclear contracts or extensions on the new nuclear contracts. I mean, you mentioned the £10 million TerraPower one there, Paul. Well, that's probably at least doubled over the period of time for the engineering services, you would think. And we've still got the HS2 contracts, which are around about, well, just less than 40 million now, and the Sellafield contract, which is 60 million. Again, both those are over 4 or 5 years, but it gives us a really good backstop there for the future years. You layer on run rate work and all these exciting things, and yeah, we're Yeah, it's looking positive for FY27. I mean, I don't think we're going to add two zeros to the share price, but 15 times EBITDA sounds quite sexy to me.
Yeah, we'll take that. See if anybody else believes you there, Paul.
So, but no, I mean, look, there's lots of exciting prospects. As you say, we're a small team, but actually, it's not the team you see. It's the team underneath that are, you know, working really hard and really conscious of them as well, and they're the ones who are bringing these opportunities and making these opportunities work. So, you know, long may that happen, and you know, we thank the team for all their efforts,
Yeah,
really.
and one of the advantages of our pie model, Paul, is that you build strong teams in the businesses because if you're ultimately going to exit again, they need to be a strong team to be the right shape for exit, and they are strong teams, and so they're very capable in themselves, and they don't need Steve and I scooting around all the time getting under their feet. You know, they're capable of doing most of this work themselves, and they do. You know, and to that extent, for example, you know, yes, I meet big customers occasionally, but it's not a weekly occurrence. You know, the guys are doing it themselves basically. And they're handling it very well.
We
And
both
then
did it. You both.
on the other side, Paul, we've just had the 500th apprentice go through the Metalcraft
Yeah.
training school. So that's
Great.
a real milestone. So
Yeah, fantastic.
we're really pleased with that.
Yeah, well, the share price has done pretty well. I mean, other than the thing of gold stock, I think you're probably the second sort of highest level on on AIM, certainly. So you've done really well. But just coming to the last close then, Steve, and I suppose you could just give a final remarks for shareholders. You've obviously got a lot of exciting things happening there. Anyway, what sort of like things that that investors should watch for the next sort of like 6 months or so?
More of the same and then some, obviously. We're on an accelerating path on medical and on new nuclear in particular, and other areas, as you mentioned, defence, infrastructure, etc. as well. But the two big things that are the things to watch here are definitely new nuclear and how far, how fast we can run with medical imaging and industrial. Shouldn't forget industrial imaging. So that's the big interest areas. And then, of course, as you've already highlighted, do we do exits in the next year, 18 months? Don't we do exits in the next year, next 18 months? We'll see. I mean, that's certainly the highest possibility it's been for several years in terms of exits. But if we can see more value for shareholders, it might go the other way. And as I say, if we need to invest faster in terms of new nuclear in particular, then I think investors, I'm sure, won't be shy of helping us with that. And equally, if we come across anything that we think is of strategic importance to any of the businesses, then we might well still be in acquisition mode. We'll see about that as well as we move forward.
I guess your pipeline's pretty strong, isn't it? Your sales pipeline.
Yeah, very. I mean, again, the strongest it's been actually. Not only is the order cover good, but the pipeline of opportunities, again, particularly around new nuclear, is completely bonkers in a good way. So, to the extent we might actually get to a point where we have to turn down a customer or two just because we won't be able to cope with the breadth of opportunity, because we've got to be careful about that. There's no point in your eyes being bigger than your belly, as my granny used to say. You have to be able to digest what you're looking at, and that might limit us at some point, but not yet.
Yeah, very high quality problem. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, gents. Congrats on the first half results. I'm really looking forward to hearing how the business progresses over the next few months.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's
oh,
basically
yeah.
all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.